Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Confusion continues to reign from the White House. One day after U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that he would be going to North Korea, President Donald Trump tweeted that the trip was canceled. Trump cited a lack of progress by the North Koreans to denuclearize as the reason. The North Koreans say American leaders are acting like gangsters, with the country's state-owned newspaper accusing Washington of hatching a criminal plot against Pyongyang. Stay with us as we try to bring some clarity to a very confusing situation.
Denuclearization talks between the U.S. and North Korea are on the verge of collapse. U.S. President Donald Trump on Friday canceled a planned visit by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to North Korea. Trump cited insufficient progress in the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula as the reason for his decision. Trump's move has once again thrown efforts to resolve the issue of North Korea into confusion. Meanwhile, in his tweets, Trump tied the stalled talks with Pyongyang to trade relations with China. He said China is not helping because of trade tensions with the U.S. China said it was irresponsible of the U.S. president to accuse Beijing of doing little to help denuclearize the Korean Peninsula.
President Trump and his constant escalation of the conflict with China over essentially immaterial issues is part of the problem, and the Chinese see absolutely no reason to be helpful, to be no reason to be conciliatory on North Korea.
Pyongyang has repeatedly complained about the, quote, gangster-like diplomacy of the Trump administration. Not easing sanctions may have cost the U.S. North Korea's cooperation in denuclearization.
The unraveling of the so-called denuclearization deal was overblown and overhyped from the start. It was good that Trump and North Korean President Kim met. However, Trump believed that all he had to do was to have the North Koreans destroy all of their nuclear weapons and all of their means of delivery, and everybody would be happy. And he never gave any thought to the North Koreans' point of view.
After his summit with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in June, Trump said the North was no longer a nuclear threat. Now, U.S. intelligence agencies say satellite images show North Korea is developing new missiles. The U.S. had earlier confirmed Pyongyang was dismantling its missile testing site. Meanwhile, the U.N. nuclear agency, the IAEA, has said North Korea is continuing its nuclear program. Analysts believe that it was naive of Trump to say North Korea was no longer a nuclear threat in the first place.
These meetings change the tone, but they don't help with the substance that much, because the substance is still this basic conundrum. How would you do the first step in a nuclear deal that ultimately might lead to the denuclearization of North Korea?
Meanwhile, experts say it's highly unlikely North Korea will abandon its atomic arms, because the weapons of mass destruction are key to the country's survival.
We've been told for many years by the North Koreans that they highly value their nuclear weapons program, because it's the legacy of the whole Kim family going back to the grandfather and founder, and also because they have observed what happened to Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi and the Taliban when they fought the United States without nuclear weapons.
Pyongyang has repeatedly cited U.S. military threats and the presence of American troops on the Korean Peninsula as one of the reasons.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, political commentator and analyst, Mr. Jason Unruhi, out of Niagara Falls, Ontario. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Jason, what do you make out of Trump's cancellation of Pompeo's visits just a day after Secretary of State announced that it would take place?
I think it's, again, another example of the way that Trump does business. Everything was scheduled to go. The man was getting ready to do his job, and then, you know, they just turn around and cancels the whole thing like 10 minutes before it was supposed to happen, according to at least one report. It's like Trump just made a decision last second to go ahead and just end the meeting without even bothering to tell the guy who was supposed to go and do the meeting. I mean, this is like incredibly unprofessional. I mean, you would at least want to plan these kinds of things, that if Trump wanted to cancel the meeting, he should have done so much earlier and at least tell the guy who was supposed to go and meet with the DPRK that it was going to happen. But I mean, we see this with the United States, particularly under the leadership of Donald Trump, that he will make these kinds of knee-jerk reactions to decisions that are being made. It almost sounds like he forgot that this meeting was going to happen and that he had intended to cancel it. And then, again, that's all speculation on my point. It's just very strange the way that he decides to do this. I mean, we heard unendingly about how the last meeting ended with great success, tremendous things were going forward, and other really vague positive statements that didn't particularly have any substance. And many people rightfully saw this as, well, frankly, fluff, nothing that really meant anything. Mm-hmm. It seems almost like the two leaders just met up and said, just talk to each other like friends for a little while, and then just ended it like that. There was nothing really of any substance. I think Trump probably went in, said, could you denuclearize? And he said, okay, drop the sanctions, and that was it.
Okay. All right, let me get our next guest in on this, the Congressional Defense Policy Advisor, Frederick Peterson, out of Richmond, Virginia. Welcome to the program. Frederick, do you think that what we're seeing with the North Korean situation reflects a lack of experience on Trump's part, or does it perhaps reflect a schism among the political elites in Washington?
Actually, I think what we're observing on behalf of the United States and President Trump is an extraordinary progress for a war that has been over for 68 years, virtually, and zero progress has been made toward ending a ceasefire that is more than a half a century old until Donald Trump comes into office, and in a matter of months has not only a ceasefire on the table, but also has an agreement to eliminate nuclear arsenals, an agreement to work on the prosperity and progress for the entire Korean Peninsula, and that part of the world has the first opportunity in several generations, actually, to see real substantial progress. Mm-hmm. And yet we have those who will wander around with their hands in their pocket, whistling up at birds, talking about how nothing is happening, this is dangerous. These are the same non-leaders, the same incompetents that have led the world to absolutely nowhere. And we live in increasingly dangerous times where we cannot allow that kind of failed leadership to take over. We
should, Frederick, do you feel that there is a schism then among the political elite? Because if we look at analyses that are coming out of the U.S. right now, many of those close to Trump or who have been close to Trump also are saying that nothing is really happening. So is there a divide that's taking place between the political elite in Washington?
There is, in Washington, we call that the swamp. There is a swamp that has become increasingly deep, increasingly wide, increasingly lethargic in pursuing not only the interests of the United States, but the larger interests of a peaceful and prosperous world. That swamp is threatened by Donald Trump, mm-hmm. because Donald Trump came to Washington with zero political background and no measurement, no membership in that swamp.
Okay.
That is threatening. And there is a schism. You're exactly right.
Okay, well,
there
what about that, Jason?
Is.
Let me get Jason back in on this discussion. Stay with me, Frederick. Jason, dealing with what you've just heard, what Frederick was saying, I want your perspective, because isn't it true that many of the powers that be in the U.S. actually did not want this, the Trump and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un meeting to even take place?
I think that there were definitely forces inside the government that didn't want that to take place. I'm sure there's members of the elite of the capitalist class that didn't want it to take place. They want a destruction and a destabilization, the removal of the socialist government inside of the DPRK in order to get a hold of the somewhat 6 trillion in estimated rare earth minerals that are inside the country. And I think that a lot of them don't want any peace because they know that Kim Jong-un will not be so happy to turn over those minerals and just allow the country to be plundered by imperialism. The goal has always been to try to remove the anti-imperialist structure of the DPRK. And Trump seems to be one who's not particularly experienced in these and wants and perhaps sees an anti-nuclear deal with Kim Jong-un as something he can tout, as an accomplishment that he can hold. I mean, I'm sure there are very much interests inside the U.S. government and inside the elites that certainly do want some kind of agreement so that less resources can be spent on occupying the South. But I think that a large portion of this is simply just a pipe dream. The DPRK is not going to give up something that is such a strong asset to protecting its national interests against U.S. imperialism. So I think that there are conflicting views inside the U.S. government of exactly how to go about opposing the DPRK's defiance.
Well, Frederick, now many experts say that the real reason why progress isn't really being made between Washington and Pyongyang is because of the existence of the industrial military complex. And actually, they do not want peace. Money is made via conflict, war, and the threat of war. Your take on that side of things?
Well, I'm glad that we have an opportunity to discuss this because it's almost a humorous, self-indicting remark. That position is authored by the same people who have delivered absolutely nothing for almost 70 years. What they have delivered is a tyrant in North Korea, following a tyrant preceding him who grossly abuses his people and has suffered his people down to some of the lowest levels of deprivation and oppression on the face of the earth in history. And yet we have them worried about companies or interests from the West, that evil power of the West, who can come in and assist the people to build up that country, make it prosperous again, make the people prosperous, and turn on the lights, which incidentally they don't have, in North Korea. Take a look at a satellite shot of North Korea and South Korea at night. South Korea, both the same people, both Korean peoples. North of the DMZ, this demilitarized zone for 70 years, has darkness. Zero is going on. The people are starving. They are being oppressed, routinely murdered. And this is what your other guest fears, is the prosperity that they have in the South. That is, you know, it is almost utterly irresponsible. It would be comical if it didn't have such dire human consequences.
Well, let me give Jason a chance to respond to that. Jason, your take on what Frederick has said.
Sure.
I'm sorry, but he's terribly ignorant of the situation that's going on in the DPRK right now. Simply pointing to satellite photos completely ignores the fact that the DPRK has energy embargoes placed against them to prevent them from getting a hold of the necessary materials in order for power generation, and then spend decades trying to stop them from building nuclear power to also power the country. And then there's the ongoing nonstop sanctions trying to destroy the country, and then simply point to them and look at how they're not as developed as essentially the first world. I mean, this is just simply something that's completely devoid of any context. And to say that Kim Jong-un is afraid of development
is simply
nonsense. This is an outright lie. The DPRK has been trying to develop itself in the face of all these tremendous sanctions. To even compare the South, which has been assisted by the United States for decades, whereas the North has been hindered by by the United States for decades. It's simply facetious to completely ignore that part. Many of these accusations of human rights abuses are almost completely without any basis whatsoever and merely anecdotal evidence from people who have been shown to be paid upwards of $800,000 for stories. Stories that which frequently, Yongmi Park, for example, whose story completely fell apart once it was held up to scrutiny. And I think this idea that somehow the United States would help the DPRK develop is simply nonsense in the face of almost 200 years of history. Okay. The United States has plundered countries time and time again.
Well, Frederick, if the U.S. really wants to solve the situation in North Korea, why don't we see any type of budging at all from the U.S. side? We saw a demand, basically total denuclearization, and then basically nothing coming from the United States, not an easing or promise of easing of sanctions, nothing until the whole denuclearization process is supposed to be finished.
Well, again, what we're doing is accepting what has been said by the other side and then moving forward to another basis that can have the most outrageous comments made about it. I know that the great humanitarian leader of North Korea is a socialist hero of your other guest and delivers peace and prosperity and love to his people. But the lights are out, not because we turn them out,
Frederick,
but because the system
please,
turned
we're
them
very
out.
Limited in time. We've touched
of a
on
system.
That. Both of you have touched on that particular subject. I want to look at this aspect, what I just asked you, if you could answer the question at hand.
Yes. Yes, could you rephrase the question one more time and we
yes,
will
basically,
answer
if the United
directly.
States really wanted to reach a deal, why do we see that Washington has basically said total denuclearization, that's what they're expecting from Pyongyang, without giving
Perfect.
Anything to North Korea, not even an easing of the sanctions until after the total denuclearization process is done?
Because we're not going, the West, the responsible West, the responsible world, East and West, is not going to be led down a primrose path as your other guest has led us and his people have led us in the past to tyranny, to abuse of people, oppression, and economic utter basket case failure. What we are going to have is real progress in exchange for real results. We are not going to have nuclear weapons irresponsibly held by a petty tyrant who threatens his neighbors and extorts from the world treasure
while he is depriving his own people of liberty and prosperity. The negotiations as defined by the United States is basically
legitimate
that we say for you to do or else we will sanction you. So that's the definition of the negotiations, right, coming out of Washington?
The words have meaning. Words have meaning. Agreements mean nothing unless they are followed up by practical measures, real steps to see that you can promise anything. Your other guest has accepted promises out of tyranny for years and years because they don't have the courage nor the real principles to stand up to it because they have an affinity for it, and they are the oppressors of the real aspirations of the people.
Out of the United States does not seem to have any type of meaning, as we saw in the Iran nuclear deal. But Jason and Ruhi, your take on all of this, where is this going? Do you think that at the end of the day that some type of deal is going to be made? Are we looking at the United States being the bully on the block? Again, do everything we say or else.
Oh, that has been essentially just how the United States has operated since the beginning. They continue, like, it's ironic the description that was just given about Kim Jong-un, that this was equally given to basically every leader of the United States there has ever been. The constant invading of other countries, killing tens of millions of people just to plunder the wealth that is inside the country, and then to claim that this is to help them, almost reeks of the, you know, white savior complex that was used against Native Americans or even Africans. It's okay that we enslave you because we technically raise your standard of living. I mean, this is the same kind of mentality. I think that the main thing here is the DPRK has a right to self-determination. They have a right to determine their own destiny, however it is that they want to proceed, just as the United States has the right to pursue its own destiny and does not need to be threatened by other countries into trying to operate their economy the way it is.
Okay. Unfortunately, I wish we could continue this conversation hopefully another time, but we are out of time at this point. I appreciate both of you being with us. Congressional Defense Policy Advisor Frederick Peterson out of Richmond, Virginia, and political commentator and analyst Jason Unruhy out of Niagara Falls, Ontario. As always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. See you next time.